We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome to our EdWeb for tonight. I am incredibly excited to welcome Kim Montague and Pam Harris, who are the founders of Mathis Figure Outable. For those of you who have not discovered Mathis Figure Outable yet, it has literally changed the way I think about math. So I'm crazy excited to welcome you both tonight. I've also got Brendan Screbner with me, who was a classroom teacher for 25 years and is now working with Exemplars to talk to some of these amazing people and just help us sort of share our message. I first met Pam in Maine. It was the first time you and I met in person. And I wandered into your conference session. You had the largest room in the entire state of Maine, I think, filled to the brim. People were lining the walls. And I had never really heard you speak before, Pam. And I'm just like, this is really cool. Like, what's going on right now? So I attended the session and just absolutely loved it. But then I was sitting in the waiting room of the hotel later that day, and I was waiting for some friends to arrive for dinner. And I was just chatting up the other teachers around me. I didn't know anybody. And it's like, so what was your favorite part of the conference so far? And the woman next to me is like, I love Pam Harris. She just changed the way I think about math. And I was like, okay. And the woman sitting across from us wasn't really part of the conversation, chimes in, I love her too. So you have built this community of people that just, and both of them said that you changed the way they think about math. Mm-hmm. And I think your Math is Figure Outable. The title is awesome, right? Because math is figure outable.
Absolutely.
We can make sense of math, and you're kind of bringing that whole idea to math teachers across the world. So I'm super excited you're here.
Well, I'm super excited that you're having me and my co-host, Kim. So Kim and I co-host the podcast, the Math is Figure Outable podcast. We'd love to have everybody join us there. And yeah, I had a blast meeting both you and Brendan. I may just tell a slight story. Awesome. Brendan met me when I was signing in. Super helpful. I believe you're on the board or something there. And so yep. You were able to tell me all the things and you showed me around and walked with me to places. I think we hung out for 2 days and this was a super helpful guy. And then I leave the conference. I'm on Twitter. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, that's B Scrib? Like, I know this guy. we had totally interacted on Twitter before. Yeah, Twitter's a weird world. Anyway, so it was super to meet you in person. And now I feel like I know you. I know two facets of you.
Awesome.
And I so agree. Meeting you in Maine at the Atmany conference, which is just this wonderful New England event. And I recall having a moment sitting in a session with you, Pam, where we were attending. And you had a white book in front of you and you were doing your Math is Figure Outable. And I just fanboyed the whole time. So, and then of course I followed you to DC for NCSM and NCTM. So it's been great. So here we go. Let's do this.
So that's Pam. Now, the cool thing for me about Pam and Kim is that both of you were teachers in the classroom for many years. Kim, you were grades 3-5, if I understand mm-hmm. correctly, and Pam, you were in high school. So you've lived this, right? You've really spent time in the trenches kind of figuring out how to teach. Then you both became teacher leaders, right? I think both mm-hmm. of you have worked on teaching teachers. And now you're building this amazing Math is Figure Outable. So if those of you who haven't listened to a podcast for Math is Figure Outable, I started listening to them this on my way home from Maine. I'm like, okay, I gotta check this thing out. And I giggled, who giggles while talking about math for 3 podcasts, like in a row. You make math fun. You make it funny. And the way you sort of shape it makes sense. Like the things you talk about in your podcast can be turned around tomorrow to be done with kids. And invites the kids to really be doing some thinking and some talking and some logic. So I really want to commend you for what you're bringing to education, because I think it's an amazing contribution. So that's one of the reasons I'm so psyched you're here. And with that, I want to hand it over to Brendan, who is going to lead us through an awesome conversation. So thank you, everybody, very, very much.
Thanks, Jake.
So Thanks, Jay and Kim and Pam. Here we go. Today, we're talking about math problem solving through strategies and models, which I know is an area where Pam and Kim, you marinate and live and you leverage. And so let's turn it over, Pam. I think might it be a good time to think about what would a lesson look like?
Absolutely. Well, thank you both, Jay and Brendan. We're thrilled to be here. And let's go over our lesson plan. So our lesson plan for the hour is going to look like this. We're going to start with Kim and my favorite routine called a problem string. And we're going to do that with you live. You're going to be able to watch it enacted. It's going to be marvelous. And then we're going to follow it with an exemplar task. And then we are going to use a teacher lens to look at student work on that task. And then we're going to talk about a possible next move. And if we have time, we'll chat about the relationship between fact fluency, math relations, mathematical understanding, and all the things at the end. All right. So here our lesson plan to start off with. So when Brendan said, what could a lesson look like? One of the favorite sequences that Kim and I like to use as we teach is to start a lesson by getting ideas percolating, getting students to think and reason about some specific things that then we can use later in the lesson. And when Brendan and I were planning this session, he said, it's like high dosage patterning. Well, I'm starting to use that phrase everywhere to describe problem strings because I think it's so apt. It's so apropos that it describes high dosage patterning. So here we go. I'm going to switch my input really quickly. You'll notice there on that screen that I didn't actually show you. It just says problem, problem, problem. Because if we were to actually show you the problem string right now, it would take away the impact that doing the problems one at a time can have. So when you do a problem string, kids don't see it until you do each problem, a string or series of problems, one at a time. So I'm going to be the teacher today, and I'm going to invite Kim and Brendan to be the students. And hopefully you just saw my screen change. I'm looking at Kim. Yep, she's smiling. Okay, good. All right, so we're going to do a quick series of problems today. The first problem I'm going to ask you, I'm just going to ask you flat out, what is 6 times 2? That's not hard. Just go ahead and tell me. What do you got?
12.
Yep, yeah, I've got a dozen. Cool. Yep.
All right, you got a dozen. The real question I want to ask you is, what would a 6 by 2 rectangle look like? So I'm going to go ahead and just draw part of the rectangle. I'm going to go ahead and say, if this is the 6, about how long should I draw the 2? Brendan, I'm going to ask you, how long should I draw the 2?
Well, I'm thinking a lot about the relationship between 6 and 2. And so I think it's going to be short. It's going to be less than half of the 6.
Ooh, I like less than half. That seems really helpful. So I can kind of think about this as 6 and half is maybe that. Does that look, I don't know, is that kind of 2? Maybe a little long, kind of 2. Kim, are you thinking too long?
It's okay. A little too long. It's not that. It's ish. My favorite, ish.
Ish, ish. How about, is that better?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So that might be a 6 by 2 rectangle. And you guys said that the area of that is 12. All right, yep. Cool. Next problem. What would the area of a 6 by 1/2 look like? Don't tell me the area yet. I really just want you to focus on what the rectangle would look like. So Kim, start us off. Don't tell me the whole thing. If you just were to start us off, what would the rectangle look like?
It's going to have the same side of 6. So still as long.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be sort of the 6 thing going on. Is that close? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Maybe a little longer. Okay. And then Brendan, you want to pick up from there? What would the
half absolutely. Look like? I'm thinking about half is less than 1. And so, and I know that before we looked at 2, so half of 2 is 1 and half of 1 is a half.
I mean, it's tiny. Like it's that.
It's like a fourth, right?
Mm-hmm. A fourth of that 2? Nice. And let me rewrite that because it looks terrible. So kind of like tiny. It's like, so then if that's the rectangle of a 6 by 1/2, what's the area of the 6 by 1/2? And I wonder if there's anything up here that could help you kind of think about the area of that 6 by 1/2. I don't know. We'll start with you, Brendan. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I'm thinking about the width of the second rectangle is 1/4 of the width of the upper. So the area is probably 1/4 of 12.
Which is?
I think it's 3.
How do you know 1/4 of 12?
Well, I think about a clock, and the clock has 12, and 1/4 of 12 is 3.
Oh, totally nice. Kim, do you have another way to think about a fourth of 12?
Yeah, you can think about a half of 12 is 6, and then a half of that is 3.
And if I were to kind of do that half-half thing that Kim just did, we could almost look at this 6 by 2, and we could kind of do what Brendan was saying earlier when he thought about that 6 by 1. And the 6 by 1 would have half of the area. That would be like a six by one. So I could almost even kind of sketch that in here, that like the 6 by 1, that would have a whole area of half of the 12, which would be 6. And then Kim's like, but then we got to cut that in half. And so that could have an area of 3. Okay. So several ways that we can kind of think about 6 by a half, the area of 6 by a half. I'm a little curious. If we were to think about a half of 6, 1/2 of 6, is that also 3? So a few ways that we can think about that 6 by 1/2 or that half of 6. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of those little extra guys there. We kind of have the area of that 6 and a half is 3. Cool. The next problem I'm going to ask you to think about is, what would the area of a 6 by 2 and a half rectangle, what would the area of that rectangle be? So everybody thinking. Now, usually if I'm in a class, I'll ask people to give me a thumbs up when they've had a chance to think. So Kim, I'm going to let you start this one off.
Okay. So we just did the 6 by 2. So that's the area of 12. And then we did 6 by a half. So 6 by 2 and a half is just those two pieces put together. So I'm picturing the second problem being scooched over and around to the side of the 6 by 2.
Like when you kind of said put them together, I kind of pictured that you were going to but then you said something about scooch. Can you say more about that? Or Brendan, Brendan, do you understand what she means by scooch?
What I think Kim is saying, and I absolutely love scooching in math class. And so taking that 3, that unit of 3, and sliding it over and attaching it so that the 6 height is paired up. And we just extend the 2 to 2 and a half.
So I'm going to go ahead and scooch it down here. I just redrew the 6 by 2 that had a 12, and I'm going to kind of scooch this rectangle and kind of like you guys said, we're going to sort of put it right here. And if we kind of tack it on the side there, that half, would we have that side be, well, in fact, maybe I'll draw that slightly differently. Is now the length of this side, is that 2 and a half? Sure enough. And we've got an area of 12 and an area of 3. So if I put those areas together, what is the area of a 6 by 2 and a half, both of you?
We got 15 units.
Looks like we're adding those guys together. We got 15 units. Cool. Next problem. How about if I were to ask you an 8 by 4 rectangle? 8 by 4 rectangle. So everybody thinking what that would look like. Brendan, will you start us off on this one? What would the 8 by 4 look like?
I'm thinking 8 by 4 is 32. It's 8 high and 4 across. And I learned
that I'm going to draw that 8 longer than that 6.
Yeah.
And then can you describe the 4 in relation to the 8?
Is it Kim describing?
Go ahead, Brendan. You keep going.
Oh, well, the 4 is half of the 8.
All right. So maybe that?
Sure. Yep.
4 is half of the 8. And you said the area was 32?
Yep.
All right. Nice, nice. How about 8 by a half? Could we draw that rectangle? Kim, give me an idea of what 8 by a half would look like.
So just like before, I think it's going to be smaller than the width of 4. It's going to be significantly smaller.
Well, it would be kind of that same half that we had over here on the 6.
Yep.
We could kind of think about that. I don't know. That looks a little skinnier, doesn't it? Pretend those are the same skinny.
Ish, Pam. It's ish.
Ish. It's ish. It's ish. So now the big question is, what would the area of an 8 by 1/2 rectangle, what would that look like? Brendan's kind of doing.
We're scooching.
Oh, we're not scooching yet, Brendan. We're just 8 by a half. You're going. I know where you're going.
I got like Texas excited.
You were
big excitement.
8 by a half. Is anybody thinking about an 8 by 1 to help you think about an 8 by a half? Brendan, can you talk about that? How are you thinking about an 8 by 1?
Well, I'm thinking about an over strategy, and I know that 8 times 1 is 8, and half of that would be 4.
So all of that's 8, then half of that would be 4. So you're saying that 8 by 1/2 would have an area of 4. And then Brendan wants to scooch. So if we were to get this, if the next problem, great guess, was 8 by 4 and a half, he's like, let's just scooch that guy up here. I am going to actually just scooch this time. Oops, kind of draw that. There's that half. So 8 by 4 and a half, let's see, that was an area of 4. So what would the area of an 8x4.5 be? Kim, go ahead.
36.
So that 32 and that 4 together, you're saying is an area of 36. Cool. Hey, when we've just done the string, I kind of gave you a rectangle to start with that, you know, like we've been doing a lot of multiplication in class lately. You know, you've been thinking about 6 times 2 and 8 times 4. You guys have those multiplication facts you're thinking about. Nicely done. We had to think a little bit about some things by a half, you know, like a dimension by a half. And then we kind of put them together. Nicely done. What if I don't give you the pieces? What if I just give you flat out that sort of last problem and I ask you, could you create the pieces? You know, like I came to work unprepared today. I didn't, you know, all I have is kind of the next, if I were to say that the next problem is something like 4 times 3.5, what could the pieces be? All right. So I'll start with Kim. Kim, what could one of the pieces be?
I like a 4x3.
And what's the area of a 4x3?
12.
Okay. And then Brandon, you get another piece?
Yeah, I'm going to hit that 4x1/2, which is 2.
4x1/2. And you're saying that's 2. So there's this is 4 and there's the half. 4. No, that's not a half.
Pretty wide.
That was pretty wide. Oh my gosh. Okay, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. Everybody cheer me on. Is that? That's the squirreliest looking rectangle ever. And you said the area of that was a 2. So are we going to scooch again? We could scooch?
And yeah, we're composing, that, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Instead of so decomposing,
If we have that 4x3 and we tack on that little half over here, you guys said that was 12 and 2. And so the area of a 4x3.5 is? 14.
14.
What do you think?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, Brendan, let me point out a couple things about the string. Maybe I'll ask you, Kim, are there some things that you would want to point out that maybe were purposeful? Like, are there some things I did that were just kind of random or like, yeah, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, for sure. Your models, using an area model to represent the area, you're thinking about dimensions and they are proportional, right? So we joke about ish, but it's really intentional the way that you're representing and the dimensions being like the half is a fourth of the 2. And then when you put them together, it still maintains those same spaces for the third problem to help kids make sense of those pieces being put together.
Absolutely. Brendan, I'll just shoot you. Is there anything that you noticed that you want to just bring up that you think might be purposeful in what we just did?
Yeah, I think totally the intentionality of this problem string and that it was built with a reason, starting with whole numbers, and then the specific modeling, like Kim said, and the precision of the height and width, and that we were taking whole number and fractional part, and we were composing and adding them together. And there's a whole lot of language in here, like factors and divisors that exist in the area model, and I see in the chat blowing up. And I'm really thinking about how this extends into high school. So
I'm noticing in the chat, Liz mentioned something about completing the square. Absolutely. Yeah. So in high school, we can, if we got kids thinking, really thinking and reasoning about area, completing the square makes a whole different kind of sense than if we're just doing this kind of algebraic step-by-step procedure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. If we have time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, the structure of the string that Brendan's talking about is super important, but also some of the teacher moves I think that you do that make it seem seamless, I think we should call out, because one of the things you do is you pose the problem, you ask us what we're thinking. There were a couple of times that you said, just start us off, right? So you, for students who aren't sure about completely finishing the problem, it's a way to draw them into the conversation. So just start us off, wait, don't say too much. Gives others a suggestion of a way to get started, also draws in kids who haven't finished the problem yet. And one more that I want to mention is that when we give you our responses, you repeat back, oh, you think it's this? Very neutral, very repeating back, did I hear you correctly? You think it's this, but not acknowledging whether it's right or wrong. We become, we spend a lot of time as teachers, I think, saying, good job, you got it. But withholding that a little bit is intentional, so that you are just reflecting what kids are saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is intentional for me not to go, yes, right. And then also for me not to go, so we don't want kids to backpedal when we don't want teachers to, we're suggesting don't cue kids if they're right or wrong, because then all students get a chance to justify their thinking. When they give an answer and I say, did I hear you correctly? And then they're like, yes. And this is why all kids get used to in math class. We justify our thinking. We give reasons for what we're doing, and that's purposeful. Anything else?
One thing that was really powerful for me within your intentionality of your moves was to play the Kim and I off each other and have us like check. And so it ensured that we had a chance to listen to each other and evaluate, like, is the half dimension about a half? What do you think, Kim? What do you think, Brendan? And just giving, posing it back to the students to put it in their thinking and get them to reason and justify. I like that move.
Sometimes teachers will say to us, how do you get kids, how do you keep kids engaged when they already have the right answer? Especially if students have already learned a step-by-step procedure for something, they've got the answer, they tune out. If I say, yeah, but like, do you agree with Brendan? Do you hear what he said? Can you repeat what he said? If we in some way encourage that students, that what we do here is we listen to each other, then it doesn't matter the answer you got, what you did, because your job now is to listen to each other. There's one other intentional thing that I'll just mention for this particular problem string, which is you might have noticed that I gave you a problem, and a problem. Then I gave you a problem, and a problem. And then I said, what if I didn't give you the helpers to do the kind of clunkery problem? What if I just gave you that final problem? Could you create those sort of, like, if you were based on the pattern, that high dosage patterning that we just did, could you follow the pattern? That's also, teachers, I would invite you to consider, that's a way to get a kid who is already doing something else to dive into what we're doing, to think, okay, could I look at what's been happening and could I come up with a sample or a selected kind of helpers to get to this last problem? It doesn't matter what they were doing. They might have typed something in a calculator. They might have asked ChatGPT. They might have the answer key. Like, and none of that matters in this moment, because in this moment I'm saying, oh, this is what we're doing. What we're doing now is, could you find a way to solve this problem like we just did these other two? Like, and having kids take those patterns we're putting in front of them and do something with them. Kim, it looks like you wanted to add in something.
Yeah, I can't let it go because there's only two of us here. And in a classroom, you'd be circulating to see what kids are doing and intentionally choosing kids to share what they're thinking so that it is designed to head towards a particular goal. So there are lots of ways that you could have thought about these problems, but you have a purpose in mind. And it's not that kids can't solve however they want, but you're heading towards a goal. And so you're making choices along the way that keep the focus narrowed a bit. And again, not that kids can't solve it however they want, but you're heading somewhere and you want to draw out conversation that moves towards that goal.
And moves the math forward. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. All right. Any last words, Brendan, before we now head on to our next?
I just really appreciate, as a teacher, as an educator, you have this moment where we learn from the experience of this problem string, but we learn more when we reflect upon the experience. And so, Pam, thanks for honoring that and taking this moment to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, so back to our lesson plan. So the lesson plan that we kind of looked at before said we're going to do a problem string, problem, 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 problem. I'll show you that problem string now. So this is the string that we just did. I've kind of listed it out there. Notice again that like we said, it has a problem, we put them together, a problem and a problem, we put them together. And then there's that sort of problem without helpers. What could you do? It's a purposefully designed sequence of related problems, help students mentally construct, it says numerical there, it could really say mathematical relationships, and nudges them towards a major efficient strategy. You'll also notice that the teacher represented student thinking. You might say to yourself, well, Pam, that's because we're on a webinar right now. And so, you know, you're the only one sharing your screen. You could have had Brendan draw it down and show and put his writing up to the camera. That is absolutely a thing you can do in teaching, not during a problem string. during a problem string, we're going to say that the teacher pulls out student thinking, and the teacher with an idea of where they're going represents thinking in a very certain way. When you looked at what my iPad screen looked like at the very end there, it was very purposeful that I had those rectangles, and then slide them up to like that. There was a purposeful, it was not haphazard with crazy everywhere, which is kind of what it would look like if I had one kid do something and another kid do. I've got a plan. It's interesting. When I do problem strings, it feels super organic because I'm pulling out of kids, I'm making their thinking visible, but I have a plan in mind. I've got a display in mind. I'm actually thinking about, let me go back to that really quickly. I'm actually thinking about the fact that if I draw this six that tall, will I have room for eight and another eight? Will I not run out of room? I've thought about this before I have started the problem string. I've planned out now you might be like, well, I better never do a problem string. I don't have the bandwidth to do that much planning. First time you do it, don't worry about it. But just know that there's some purposeful intentionality to the fact that we're going to ask teachers to represent student thinking. It's not, come back. Oh, I'm having a hard time with my iPad. Just a second. Come back. There we go. It's not a free for all. And then lastly, teacher facilitates the conversation with students about the relationships. So there's the problem string. Brendan, I'm going to switch slides and let you take away where we might go next with students.
Yeah, so with this wonderful alignment, we have a problem string, and then we enter into a context. And our context today is a fifth grade fraction exemplars task, which we purposely built. Pam and Kim purposely built this problem string to align with this task and allow students to enter. So what I want to do is I'm just going to quickly read the newspaper layout is our task. It's fifth grade. The newspaper staff is designing a layout to advertise the math department's I Love Math celebration. And hey, February 14th, I Love Math Day is coming up. The newspaper staff will charge the math department for the advertising by finding the number of square inches for each part of the layout. And below, you see the layout, the diagram of the layout. The newspaper staff charges 50 cents per square inch. And our question we leave off with is, how much does the mathematics department pay for each part of the advertisement? And what is the total cost? Show all your thinking. So what I want you to do is just to take a moment. You see the diagram. You're thinking about those square inches. You're thinking about 50 cents per square inch. In your mind's eye, play around a little bit. How would the problem string and how might that be relatable, as Pam and Kim would tell us, to this diagram? Let's just give them a moment, everyone a moment to do some thinking. Really hard to be silent.
Yeah. I know people are like, they're really going to wait for us to think?
Wait. You only have an hour. Wow. Let's get going. So this performance task, I want to just give a shout out. I reached out to a bunch of educators. I just want to rattle them off. Jeff Linder, I know he's in the audience. Christine Scoville, Lisa Jimenez, Lindsay Nasser, Danny Fry, I know you're in there. Amanda Ray, Ross McGee, and Bev Carlin. And we took Pam's problem string. They took the problem string. They took the task and they employed it with their students and sent us the work. And from that work, we randomized and we selected. So the next part of our task is we are going to have the teacher lens. We're going to think about what the student work might look like, but then we're going to enter in and look at the student work and have a little conversation like we were in a PLC or a team meeting or a quick reflection to try to improve our practice. So Pam and Kim, are we ready to look at some student work?
Absolutely.
All right. Kim, before I show student work, do you want to talk through any part of this problem and maybe throw some numbers down, or do you want me to do that? Or
why don't you do that? I feel like I'm going to be talking quite a bit about this tumor. Yeah.
So I'll just note, I'm not going to do the problem for everybody, but I'll just note that we kind of have a total down here of 11 and a half inches. We had 3.5 inches over here and 3 inches over there. That might be helpful for you to find kind of that length there of that part B. Likewise, we've got 3 inches on the side over here, and we've got 6 inches on the side here. So we could probably find the difference pretty easily of that side there. So there's a few things that you might expect students to kind of look at. And then just reminding everybody, we need to know the price per rectangle, per part of the advertisement. We also need to know the price of the whole thing. And the price of everything is based on the area and then 50 cents per square inch. So maybe I'll say that much, and then Kim will pop back to some student work. We have some pictures with this student. Sorry, before we do that, let me just mention, here are some of the things that Kim and I thought we would talk about. We may hit all of these with each piece of student work. We might just do a few of them, but what strengths did the student's work demonstrate about their understanding of the task? What would you like to learn about what the student knows? What questions, especially advancing and assessing, might you ask for the student to better understand their thinking? And then ask of the student, and what could we do next with the class to move the math forward? We're going to leave that last bullet to the end because we're going to see three distinct students, and we're going to talk about kind of them and their needs. But then we're going to be real that we are, most of you are a teacher that has a whole class. And so if you've got kids all over the map, what do you do next? Do you then come up with an individual lesson plan for each student? I mean, some people might do that. We're going to be maybe a little more realistic. Is that a good word? And suggest some ways that we can move the entire class forward. So we've got some great pictures here of some students who actually did do the task, but we're not suggesting they actually, this might not be their student work, though it might be. All right, Kim, take it away. What do we see here?
Well, before we get started looking at the student work, Brendan, I'm really glad that you gave us the time to look at the problem first. You know, as teachers, doing the work that we're suggesting our kids are about to do gives us some insight into how they might tackle the problem. So anytime you have the opportunity to throw out a rich task but do it yourself first, I think will set your mind around some strategies that your kids might be using. And then, you know, Pam, the questions that we're asking are very asset-based, which is important. It's about what do we notice the kids can do? What are we wondering about? What questions are we going to ask them so that we can move their math forward individually and as a collective group? We probably will notice some things that we want to nudge them towards. But we're going to talk about some students here, and I'm super excited about it. Analyzing student work is probably my favorite thing to do. So I have notes all over my papers here. So here's our first student. And maybe we can just pepper in together some of the things that we noticed. I definitely see some evidence of some organization here, right? This chart that they've created at the top, they're definitely thinking about, I've got to find the area of each piece. I've got to find the cost of each piece. And then we see over to the right, the total. I have a lot of questions. So I am interested to have us look for just a moment at, let me go first. Pam, to the very right of the paragraph where they say they know they're correct. Confidence, I love. So there's an 8.5 times 3. And we see right below that 8.5 times 3, we see the 24 for the 8 times 3. But then right underneath that, we see a 1 and some total that's kind of scratched out. And down right below that, I've drawn an arrow where we have 34.5 times 50. And we have a 34 times 50 to find the half of 34 to get the 17. But if you look over to the left, there's no what happens with the 1/2 times 50. So it seems to me, and I would have some questions that I want to ask them about when they got started trying to use a traditional algorithm to solve a fractional amount times a whole number, they're a little unsure maybe of what to do with that fraction or part. But I was intrigued when I looked back over to the right of their original traditional algorithm for 8.5 by 3. I'm very intrigued with what I see there because I then see that 8 times 3 is 24. And below that, I see the 1/2 times 3 is 1.5. So I'm interested to know what made them think of that particular portion. So I'm imagining, and I want to have a conversation about, do they think that they need to do a traditional algorithm? But when they're unsure what to do they fall back into what do I know? And they maybe think about the problem string that they had just done, where it was finding some partial products with the whole numbers and then the fractional amount. So I circled that really big. And I said to myself, what made them think of that? I want to know if the string impacted their work. I want to know if they just happen to know any of those pieces. But I'm intrigued about the, not really sure about the traditional algorithm. I'm also very much interested in over to the left side where it has 25.5 by 50. Because in that moment we do see, the half times 50 and I don't see a decimal there, but I'm imagining that they're thinking about 50 cents. The half times 50 is 25 cents. And then we see the 5 times 50 is 250 and the 20 times 50 is 10. So I'm wondering, is that something that evolved after they started messing with the traditional algorithm? Is that where somebody interceded and said, here's how you can record the traditional algorithm? You know, I'm not really sure what the nudge was, but we see a couple of opportunities where they maybe weren't sure, but then did have some success with that. The most interesting part to me was when we go back up to the chart where it has the area and the cost, just the third and the fourth entries there. It appears to me that they're thinking about some things that we might be able to nudge towards a ratio table, which is one of our favorite models for multiplication. And so I would really want to have some conversation about those sections right there and ask kids about the relationships that are happening.
And I'll note, they did an awful lot of work about multiplying with the halves and everything. And then this 50 is super interesting to me. And yeah. I wonder, I think a thing maybe we don't know is how they went from this area to that cost.
Yeah.
And nice. do they notice a relationship there? I'd be super curious to know how they went from here to here.
Yeah.
I think we can see this total. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm glad you went to the total. I'm sorry, Brendan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really thinking also, yeah, area and cost, this rough draft thinking that the student did, and thinking about how did they connect to the problem string? You'll see in the bottom center, 11 multiplied by 3, 1/2 multiplied by 3. They've got a little bit of that equation going, and they saw some of that value from the problem string. But there's also that lingering residue of these stacking algorithms. And again, this was a one dose. This was not a high dosage patterning.
Well, I may have just misspoke a second ago when I said we're not sure about the relationship where they got it. Like clearly we can see that this 25.5, they said it's 50 cents. And so then they did the multiplication and they got from this 25.5, they got that 1275. I think what I meant was, can they see a relationship between 25.5 and 12.75, 21 and 10.50, maybe easier to see 9 and 4.50. Like, is there actually this half relationship happening? Do we have to multiply by 50 cents? What is, that might be a place we'd be interested to go next. I'm aware of the time. We probably better look at the second student.
Yeah, let's look at number two.
Yep. All right. Here is another student's work.
There's so much to say about each student.
I want to
meet these lovely teachers' kids. Yeah. Okay, so our next student, I'm going to go straight to what you were asking about for the first student. Right in the middle, we see a 90 divided by 2. So 90 is the total area, and 45 ends up being the total cost. So I'm intrigued. Right in the middle there, we've got the 90 divided by 2, and I wrote 50 is half of a dollar, so you can divide by 2. And I'm curious if that's what the kid said. Right underneath there, we see some erasure that's happening. And they did seem to find the algorithm to find the sum of 90, but then erase. I'm not sure why. The most interesting thing to me about this is that we have a student who is able to find the missing side lengths, although we don't see those lengths written down. They know how to find the area, and they do have the total cost. I don't see the total cost of each of the parts, which, you know, is interesting because they do have the total cost of the entire ad because they know the area of the entire ad. So, you know, I love exemplars because it offers a lot of opportunity for a lot of questions. As a teacher, I have some insight into their learning, and I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to have too much of an issue with every single question being answered on every single paper.
Yeah.
I love that there are lots of ways that you can go with this. The most interesting thing to me is that we see kind of the same thinking for each of the areas. We see this four-part, four-chunk, non-proportional model. So I wouldn't call it an area model because it's not representing the area.
And but each of that, those... You say that because this is a length of six, so that should be longer than a 3.5.
Absolutely.
Right. And this is 3, and that should be much shorter than 8.5. But they're drawing a square. Every time it's a square, every time they're breaking it into four chunks. And I feel like you're going to have to say more about that.
Yeah. So I'm interested in asking them, why are those the pieces that they're breaking the four chunks into? So, you know, over to the left side, they've broken up the six into 3 and 3, which in a way I suppose is nice because then you're going to get the same areas repeated. But I would wonder with them when I sit down next to them, do you know 6x3? Do you need to split up into 3 and 3 on the left side? Or could you have kept that 1 6 hole and still break up the, you know, the whole number from the fraction? But is it in your zone of proximal development to just break up one of the numbers, to slowly nudge from, you know, all four chunks into bigger, fewer chunks, which is a goal for us, nudging it into more efficient pieces. And then again, over on the right side where we have the 2 and the 1 and the 11 and the half, I would wonder, hey, I see that you have broken this into a 3 and a 1. Do you need to break it into a 3 and a 1? Would you be able to keep that 3 whole?
Are you saying two and one? Is that this one?
Yep. Is it in your wheelhouse to be able to keep one of the numbers whole and then just split the 11 and the half?
Yeah. Yeah. Bigger, fewer chunks is going to be a big goal of ours because that's more efficient. It's more sophisticated and we can do more complicated problems later and not get bogged down in crazy lots and lots of pieces. We might even have some algebra teachers on here that are like, no, every time it's four chunks. And we're like, nah. No, didn't have to be. No.
Yeah.
We can be judicious.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. So next kid. One more.
I think we're running out of time. I have so many things to say about this particular student, but again, strengths, they can find the area. They've definitely used got the money for each of the pieces. I don't see the lengths written down. So that's interesting. I wonder how they determine the lengths of each of the parts to then find the area. I want to know how they are reasoning about the new stuff. So when I go to A, I see that they have 6x3.5 and it says 21 in that box. Mm-hmm. But when I look at all of the other areas that they determine, it seems to me that they put the whole number multiplication in the box, rectangle, I guess, if they have one. But then they did the fractional amounts below. So given that 3x6 is not 21, I think that's how they probably ended up with 24. Which is not correct.
Well, I'm also thinking, Kim, about A. I'm kind of wondering that 24 could live in either A or B, and maybe it was written first. But I'm also wondering, did they use an over strategy and go 6 times 4 is 24? And then I'm just going to subtract half of 3, maybe. I think the six halves are below.
I think it's a great idea. Kim, when we were talking about this, one of the things that you helped me sort of notice was that this particular student looks like they're really thinking about the 6 halves.
Yeah.
Half a half, or over here, the 3 halves, a half. And we found that noteworthy and it influenced, I think, where we might go with our next.
They're really thinking additively about those fractional amounts.
Yeah. And just for time, I'm going to throw one more thing in here. We also noticed on this kid that went, once they found the area to multiply by 50 cents, they cut it in half. Mm-hmm. That's super. We love to have kids think about multiplying by 50 cents. That's, hey, it's not a dollar. It's going to be half that. We could cut it in half. We're noteworthily seeing that they were using this long division kind of way to do that. We would be curious if we can help kids think about finding one half, maybe a little less procedurally. That would be a thing. All right. So fantastic task, Brendan. Love the teachers. Thank you, teachers, for doing it with your students. Thanks for showing us some student work. Hopefully you got something out of us kind of looking at the student work. What could we do now to follow up for these students? What's our next step to move the math forward? We're going to give you two possible ways. And really, Kim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we might do each of them, just not at the same time. Yeah. Like, yeah, we would probably choose one, but we think both of these could be further places we could go. So here's two problem strings. A better presenter would have only shown you one of these at a time. And let me be really clear. This is a teacher thing we are doing right now. We would never, as teachers, show this to students. We wouldn't say, hey, today for your warm-up, here's a bunch of problems, go do them. Not a problem string. Problem strings are facilitated one problem at a time. Teacher elicits student thinking, represents it visually, next question. So what we're doing right now is a teacher thing where we're kind of saying to ourselves, okay, what could be a next task? Here are two possible problem strings that we could use. So I'm going to give everybody a chance to look at this first problem string. If we had another half an hour, we would have done it with you. We don't. So we had to make some choices today, but go ahead and look at these problems and wonder, where are we trying to go with students if we ask these problems in this order?
Okay, so one of the reasons that we're thinking about this divided by two is because we notice a lot of kids using an algorithm for dividing by two. And so we want to get them to think about halving numbers. So in this first problem, we've got 12 divided by 2, 1 half divided by 2. But then just like in the first problem string, we're going to put those pieces together. But notice that instead of 12 and a half with fractions, we've changed to decimal notation. So starting to relate fractions to decimals, but still using the same smart partial product strategy that we introduced in the first string.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll pick it up from there. So like then 24 divided by 2, then 23 and a half. There's Brendan's over strategy. If we already have a half divided by 2, can we get rid of it from the 24 divided by 2? Bam. And then a new problem, 34 divided by 2. Wait, what? And now we've got kids like these first problems up here. Kids could probably think about 12 divided by 2 and 24 divided by 2. 34 divided by 2, they're going to have to actually maybe do a little bit of work. We might want to represent a couple different strategies to think about that and then add that half on there divided by 2. And then we might, if your kids are ready for it, we put problems in parentheses when we're like, and if you've got bandwidth, go. There's yep. sort of an extra. Sometimes we put problems in parentheses that you might do if they might be an extra help in between. If you see a problem above in the middle of a problem string, that might be one that you could skip if your kids don't need it. Here at the end of the problem string, it might be one that you do if your kids are ready for a little bit something else to think about. Before I move on to the next string, I just want to note part of my research was if math is not about rote memorizing disconnected sets of facts and mimicking rules and procedures, then what do mathy people do? Like, if they don't mimic what the teacher said, how do they think about math? And to my amazement, I found out mathy people play with doubles and play with halves. I didn't know that. When I learned that, I said, well, I can do that. Why didn't anybody tell me that? I was a little bitter. I wrote, memorized all that stuff I could have actually understood. So everybody listening today, a thing that you could do with your students tomorrow in 5 minutes is you could say to them, hey, here's a random number, double it. And just start playing with doubling. You could just say double 7 and then go. They might say 14. You might say double 14. They'll say 28. You might say double 28. They might have to think for a minute. Then you get, yeah, and then you can just keep going. Another random number, double 13 and a half. Like depending on the age of the student, double 1/8. Give them some random number and then just start playing with doubles. Once your students have had some experience playing with doubles, you can then play with halving or halves. It's a funny word in our English. It's H-A-L-V, finding half of things. So then you can just throw out random numbers and say, what's half of six? Well, in fact, ready? What's half of 12? What's half of a half? What's half of 12 and a half? What's half of 24? What's half of 23 and a half? And literally, you're just kind of helping kids get this high dosage patterning with doubling and with halving. Okay. The other direction that we thought you could go with students after this particular task, that the string that we did, then the exemplar task, we could follow that up with something that looks very similar to the one that we started today. I give you a rectangle. I give you another rectangle. We squish them together. A little scooching going on there. I give you a rectangle. I give you another rectangle. And we scooch them together. And then I give you one that you're going to mess with. You're like, Pam, why are you doing something? We've already done that. Shouldn't the kids have already gotten it? Well, we saw the student work. The answer to that is no, kids still have some things to play with. Kids still have some things to learn. And we would want kids to have more experience thinking about these as rectangles and what those dimensions look like and using those and getting better at the area model. I'll mention specifically the student we saw who thought about six halves. We love the fact that that student was like, okay, if I've got six halves, I can, all right, there they are, and they're thinking about six halves. Would you consider that as they add those all together, that student's thinking very additively about what is actually a multiplication problem? Now, that's not a bad thing, but it's an unsophisticated thing. It's less sophisticated than we want that student to grow into. So we could, when we saw this kind of thing happening, we said to ourselves, or that kind of algorithm looking thing where the kid was trying to put that half in an algorithm, we want the students to be able to think about what does it mean to have a 6 by 1/2 rectangle? If I can think about the area of a 6 by 1 rectangle, then a 6 by 1/2 is just half of that. Bam! And now I'm thinking much more multiplicatively about that relationship, which is where we want kids when they're dealing, especially with fractions, but dealing with multiplication at all. We want them thinking more multiplicative. Kim or Brandon, is there anything else you would add into either one of these strings?
Go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I want to go all the way back to the exemplars performance task. And one of the things that's really interesting is it's 50 cents. And so this idea of a half or halving is sort of there for the picking, but it was important for the problem string that you designed to lead kids into thinking about halves and then to see if they caught it. So I loved that part of this adventure today. Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's why we constructed some of the numbers for that first problem string, right, to continue to build that idea. Pam, I want to just mention that you talked about an echo string, but it's never the intention that everybody gets it after one. So it's not like these kids failed the task or these kids didn't catch it. Something's wrong. We got to do it again. We would never suggest that students own sophisticated relationships after one opportunity. So regular repeated experiences with strategies is what we're suggesting.
And one of the things that we like about exemplar tasks is that it wasn't 32 cents per square inch. It wasn't 76, though that could have been a follow-up because I could, if I use 75 as 3/4 and then, but they used a really specific number and set of numbers that can help students reason in ways that are important. Sometimes I think we have run into the myth in math education that we must teach kids the general solution, that we must teach kids a way that they can get answers to the craziest kind of problem because they know the steps to do it. We at Math is Figureoutable push back on that. We actually think it is far more important for kids to be able to think about the important relationships and then build their reasoning enough to know when it's time to put it in a calculator, that they can solve any problem that's reasonable to solve out of calculator thinking and reasoning because we built their brains using the major relationships. And what we don't do is get stuck in algorithms that have kids then stuck, not thinking, using less sophisticated reasoning than it was intended to build. So well done, exemplars, for doing that. I'll mention that we were hoping to say that the another task that we could do after would be another exemplar task.
Yeah, we have a whole library of tasks, over 600 in our K-5, and we have fifth grade fraction problems galore available in our exemplars library. And we would hope that you, the educators out there, would grab onto a problem string, buy some of Pam's books, open up those problem strings, and really be intentional about which string you use, and pair it up with an exemplar's performance tasks, and really do like Kim, be inner Kim, and examine that student work. Grab a buddy, grab the work, and take a look at the student thinking that is evoked, so that you, as a teacher, can refine your practice and refine your next problem string, and refine what questions you ask your students in the next time they encounter the performance test. So, absolutely. Jay, looks like Jay has popped onto the screen. So,
I have a question. Oh, we can literally do this all day. I suspect.
We need hours.
Yeah, indeed. We only have a 30th of an hour.
Turn the cameras off. We'll keep going. Natalie asked, what are students doing while you're doing the problem strings? Are you expecting them to be writing this down? Or are they purely listening? What's the student's responsibility during the string?
The student's overarching responsibility is to think and use what they know. Not pull from rote memory, but like what pings for you? What intuition do you have? And think and reason. If it would be helpful for you to write something down to keep track of the relationships you're using, totally legal. What we don't really want is for kids to be writing something down that they've mimicked, that they learned in the grade before. That's not super helpful. We want them using what they know, but it is completely legal for them to do that all in their head or to take note of what they're doing in their head so that they can keep track. Their job is to be reasoning, not copying. We really want to keep kids out of copy mode.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Kim, our goal at Exemplars is to teach a generation of kids to solve the problems of the 21st century. We believe that mathematics and science and engineering really are the keys to solving a lot of these problems in front of us. What I love about your work is that you're inviting students and teachers into this world of thinking. And to this idea of application of mathematics. It's not just this abstract, here's an equation, give me the right answer, and we're done. It's really, let's think flexibly, let's investigate, let's play. I discovered the beauty of mathematics recently, trying to understand math. I took a master's course in mathematics, and I was like, oh, math is really cool. Like this base 10 system that we've invented is magical. It explains and helps us understand the entire universe. And as we can give students an opportunity to discover that flexibility that mathematics has, that stretchiness that it holds, any problem you put in front of the math world, it holds. And it's really pretty cool. And I think your problem strings do that in a very magical way. They allow kids to sort of see the relationships, play with the relationships with no expectation other than to kind of play with numbers, which I love. Love it. Love it.
And it feels like play, but it's the most important math recess ever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think an important question right now for a lot of us in education is, what's the role of math in the 21st century, right? We have calculators in our pockets everywhere we go that I can point my camera at, and it'll give me the answer to any equation. So what's left for us humans? What's left for us in our math classes? And I think we're still investigating that question and what really we're going to do as math educators. But your work is so, it's going to be valid forever because you're inviting kids to think about mathematics and really discover how it's figure outable. It all does make sense.
And really the discipline of mathing, that we can actually math the way mathematicians mathed in grade 2, in fourth grade. Like that we can, it's mathematicians never just memorize those equations and spit stuff out. They were always playing with numbers. And now that we know that, we can bring that to the rest of the world. What a great mission that we're on, and love partnering with Exemplars.
Well, it's been an honor. I'm so happy that I met you in Maine so that I could investigate your podcasts and to just kind of have you in my head, not too much, but have you in my head just thinking about math with me. It's like, oh, it's a really cool thing to do with some time to just kind of
Can it be too much, Jay? Can it be too much?
Too much of anything is not good. Yeah.
With all students, all the time, all math, all reasoning, all figure outable.
It's all figure outable.
Well, Kim, Pam, Brennan, I can't thank you enough. I'm a math guy, so I wanted to point out that at 10 minutes into the session, we had fewer people than we had with 10 minutes left in the session, which has never happened. Usually people kind of, you know, wander away. So it's a testament to how engaging you were that we kept all those people for a full hour. So thank you to all of you. Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank I know you,
it took time putting this all together.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. Reach out to any of us. You have all of our emails there, and Exemplars and Math is Figure Outable is here to help any way we can. So thanks. And thanks for being teachers. We greatly appreciate it.
Yes.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.